call the August 15th meeting as Ways and Means order. I could take some of their order if I want to go to Resolution 461. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion. Donald is here. If you just want to introduce yourself. And
sure. How's everybody? I met some of you before, and some of you may not have met me. I'm a lifelong resident of Kingston, New York. I've been working for the state for the last 14 years. I started in juvenile corrections. I work with kids as a YDA, which is a youth aide. And then I was promoted to a youth counselor, where I was able to help kids transfer from inside facility to back in the community and set services up for them and their families. From there, I went to Spring Valley as a licensor for daycare centers. I moved to from DJ Joy to Division of Child Care, where my job was inspecting daycare programs, investigating complaints, and working with the program to make sure they were in compliance with our regulations and policies. I was promoted to supervisor there. And then we had an office change, so then I moved up to Albany. And from Albany, I'm in the home office, still with the Division of Child Care, but right now I supervise the criminal background checks for anybody that works in daycare, and I work with the enforcement unit. I supervise the enforcement units. So we bring enforcement on any of the programs that are violating the regulations. I'm still on, to diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility committees, where we've done some pretty good work in the last couple of years. One of the committees I work on deals with the employees for the state, and the other committee deals with the providers and the parents and the children and how to celebrate diversity in our daycare programs. So before that, I worked in Kingston. I worked at Home Depot for many years, Lowe's for many years, Sports Authority when they used to be here. So I've got my roots here in Kingston. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. So it's been a really rocky year for the Human Rights Commission, and I'd just like to hear some of your thoughts about getting it back on a solid footing and re-engaging with community, and especially community who felt really disconnected or angered by the commission.
I don't know all the details of the previous commission. What I do know is from what I read in the papers, and one of my, I think, my best assets is I'm a people person. I love being out in the community. I love working with everybody. And the team that's bringing me in has some really good ideas as well. I met with the chair of the commissions, Reverend Fuller. He has seems to have a really good head on the shoulder and what direction that he wants to go in, which I support, more training for staff, better protocols and how we do our job in the commission. So it's going to take me a minute to get my feet wet. Most of my human rights experience came from our human resource departments because we didn't have human rights in a lot of the jobs that I worked for. We had human rights issues, but they were handled by human rights as long as myself as a manager. But I'm very, very eager to get started and seeing what the bulk of the complaints are, what the issues are. I think until I dive in and see what everything is going on, I'll give you a better answer.
I look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I was just going to ask you, did you do anything with athletics when you were a younger man? You have to talk a little bit about that, just to give us a little bit more of your younger years in the area, because it's something you should be very proud of.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. I was a track athlete here in Kingston. I went to Georgia Tech on a scholarship. I had some success in track and field, and then I met some friends that were on the U.S. bobsled team, and I was able to luckily go to the Olympics in 94 in the sport of bobsledding. So thank you. So I traveled around the world a little bit. I would like to say I can speak several languages, but very little.
Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. Back to the topic. Resolution 486.
I'll move it. Okay, we can bump.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll second it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 3:30 as presented. Have a motion?
I'll make a motion second. For discussion.
Second it. Discussion.
So we've had a couple of different. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
And so we've had a couple of changes over the last couple of days. So I just want to make sure that I have an opportunity. This last one just came out shortly ago. So. So that's membership.
So you said you wanted to speak on.
Yeah, that might be easier.
Looks like we took all the funds.
So the biggest change was we, per request from minority leadership, we changed the composition so it's more balanced. It does give the legislature the majority of the seats as well. There was a suggestion that Chairwoman Bartels made to tighten up the requirements that are being outlined here so that they're interpreted as requirements. So we changed may to shall in a number of instances. Legislator Petit made a suggestion about being able to accommodate future funding sources, so we clarified that. And then there was one that we then
I don't
did
see that.
Where is that one?
Yeah, could you? It's toward the end.
Oh.
It's in the fourth to last resolve, fifth to last resolve.
What was the question?
Where's the funding designated?
The funding one is on page 6.
So include recommendations.
Is the second resolve on page 6? And it's, you know, it's worth noting, because this has been a question a couple times, that this resolution by itself doesn't compel any future funding. Any future funding will have to be made through its own appropriation process.
Any other questions?
Just one question that I didn't notice for last year, because I forgot that it was in a resolve. We're still anticipating that, I guess, that this language of up to leaves the room, but $3 million to be made available in the next 4 months?
Yeah, so that is going to be challenging. The original language that was proposed by the executive 3 months ago actually said that it's hereby allocated.
Right.
We toned that down to kind of meet them halfway and say we expect that will be possible. If it's not possible. In my conversations with the planning department regarding moving back the start date, because the original start date was based on when the legislation was originally introduced, we moved it back 2 months to November 1st when the housing oversight committee will meet for the first time, with the acknowledgement that we will endeavor to have something be released by this year, by the end of this year, but it might not be possible. And nothing here, you know, we wouldn't. That would just be how it goes. There's nothing here that requires us to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder, since, and I appreciate this, since it doesn't require us to do it, but since, I wonder what the harm of, I guess I could see it both ways, of leaving it in or just removing that resolve, because the reality is, if you're talking about a November release, it's, how likely that we're actually going to expend the money in 2023? I mean, to be fair.
Well, I think that the important thing, you know, spending money in a program like this is going to take a long time, because, you know, for each project that's awarded, they're going to have criteria that they're going to have to hit in order to get the funding released. The important thing is that when the notice of funding availability is made public, that funding is made public, and that people can expect that the funding is going to be there when they apply for it. So it might not get spent, but having it be part of the NOFA is important.
I guess the point would be that we would anticipate that the first NOFA would go out in 2023, but for fiscal year 2023, I think it's not really realistic. If there's a notice of funding application going out in November, I mean, just based on, and Vice Chair Criswell knows this through ARPA, just based on how things have moved through ARPA, it's not very likely that if a notice goes out in November that it's going to hit fiscal year 2023's numbers. So, I mean, we don't have to change it necessarily, but I think the important part is that it's anticipated that there would be a notice of funding going out in 2023, not that it's a fiscal year 2023 notice of fund. And I know that may be seem like not an important distinction, but I think it is, because this resolved projects the idea that we're actually going to spend $3 million in 2023, which I think sitting around this table, we're all acknowledging is not going to happen.
Well, if the language says that it will be made available for competitive proposals, it doesn't mean that it's going to even be committed to responses to those proposals.
But it's the fiscal year 2023 that's the problem, from my perspective.
Do you have a response to that?
We can strike fiscal, I mean, if that would be...
So, I think the reason the executive team looked at this was that if you look at any funding allocation that is put out by any agency, including your own ARPA funding work that's been done, there was a dollar figure attached to that so that the people that were responding knew that there was a chance that they could get funding and knew how much funding there was available. So it's not an issue in terms of, from my perspective, it's not an issue in terms of spending it in a particular fiscal year. It's in terms of basically the legislature and others understanding that there's a commitment to look at the applications that come in and think about how about $3 million could be spent, whether we get $3 million worth of applications or $1 million worth of applications. The point is that there's a commitment from the county to make available for housing up to $3 million. It doesn't necessarily have to be in any particular fiscal year. It has to be within the NOFA. And I would also say this corresponds to how you're treating the funds, because you're treating the funds as an assignment in the fund balance. So it is available, and the legislature is going to do the appropriations associated with whatever fiscal year they come in.
Thank you. So through the chair to Legislator Uchtel, Abe. So do you anticipate having the I'm gonna get this stuff down, man. HPOC in place prior to putting out NOFAs? How's that?
Yes. Yeah. Our hope is that the oversight committee will be in place. If my goal is within the next month or so, mm-hmm. and so that way the goal of having them meet for the first time by November 1st will be.
Okay, and then my second question is, one of the major concerns that I have about this is the, and I'm going to be blunt, lack of concrete commitment here. Assigned money doesn't mean dedicated money, doesn't mean guaranteed money, right? It means it's assigned and it can be changed just as quickly as it's assigned, it can be unassigned, right? By the whim of a legislature that all of a sudden doesn't agree with it, or something goes wrong with the program, right? Say it's misadministered like other programs that we've had, and all of a sudden the legislature says, no, we don't want to put any more money there. So my concern is, you know, this is a great idea, and I think it's vital, and it shows the support of the community for, you know, other places where, you know, they look for community support when they're going for other types of grants and things like that, correct? So my concern is that we do not have a permanent funding stream in place here. I think that, for me, you know, even before you cite the board, right, or sit in the board, however you want to put that, I think we should work on getting a permanent funding stream for this, be it through the bed tax or, you know, whatever. I don't care, because it's important that we do make sure that there's always going to be money continually flowing into this fund, and it won't be at the whim of a legislature or an executive as to whether or not we get that money in this fund.
Legislator Maloney?
Yeah, I agree with what Legislator Cale just said. We have Rudigan's, Elizabeth Street, Broadway, 911 Center, haven't done a great job handing out ARPA funds. Our financials are not in order, and then we're gonna, with a couple of months, take money, we don't even know how much we have or where it's eventually gonna come from, and then speed up a process. What process, what money have we given out over the past year or two that gives us confidence? Why, it sounds like we're trying to talk our way in, or we don't want to be offensive. It's in there. We don't really like it. Doesn't makes us a little uncomfortable. Let's just take it out. It doesn't make a lot of sense. We, you know, I'm trying to remind everybody we're a board of directors to a $400 million government corporation. Let's start acting like it. It doesn't make sense to a lot of us. Let's just take it out.
Yeah, I don't mind keeping it in because I think it leaves the door open for a possibility. You just never know. There could be something that's really just a slam dunk project that's already ready to go. It goes through the process very quickly, and then the money's there to support it. So I don't think there's any harm in keeping it in, and I like keeping that door open.
Thank you. Through the chair to either Director Doyle or the chair of the ARPA committee, was this $3 million put into an ARPA fund already? Because we've done some other projects, such as the respite housing, and
this has
it
nothing
has
to
not
do with
been
ARPA.
Allocated at all.
This has nothing to do with ARPA.
I'm just
one
trying to
figure out.
I mean, again, I'm not sure if, I mean, I could go either way. That resolved, I think what Legislator Maloney, you're talking about that resolve that I was referencing.
Yes.
So I don't think that, I think if we removed that resolved or the fiscal year 2023, you know, and it just said that the first notice of funding shall be for, $3 million, that either way it doesn't preclude the first notice of funding from being for $3 million. Like, again, I feel like sometimes these resolutions are overly prescriptive. I agree with Legislator Cahill in terms of the ongoing funding being the most critical. You know, I have expressed to the sponsor and to others my concern about the $15 million assignment, especially when we're only talking about spending a percentage of the 15 annually, and an assignment's just an assignment. It's not actually dedicated, but it is a substantial amount of money, but we're only talking about spending a percentage of it every year. What concerns me more is having the dedicated that you're talking about, Legislator Cahill, where we know money's coming in every year that's going to keep this moving. You know, because it's an assignment, I've sort of stepped back from it a little bit. I'd be much happier if it were a lower number. But again, this fiscal, and that's not to say that I've said this to the sponsor as well, that I wouldn't support spending more than that amount of money on the right project, particularly as it relates to emergency and temporary housing on the right project. I would make even a bigger investment. It's just having a name assigned to a very large number where we're only going to use a certain portion of that number, but we're not actually locked into it. To me, it's just hard for me to wrap my head around it because it's not restricted. It's just, it's a name we're giving to something. But that resolved, I appreciate the backing off from the previous way the resolved read, because the way the resolved read, I definitely would have been a very strong no, that the language was, I mean, I actually, not only did it go too far, I think it needed to be a separate resolution, you know, because it was committing us to doing something in a way that I don't know that we could within one resolution. But I'm just curious if we removed the fiscal year 2023 from that resolved, or we removed that resolved, and maybe this is a question for Planner Doyle since he's been involved, that doesn't stop us from doing a NOFA for $3 million in short order, does it?
Or five.
Or, yeah.
Or ten.
So the short answer is no. Obviously, you can still do the NOFA. The difficulty that you have if you do it that way is there's no expectation on the other side, if you're an applicant, on the other side about how much money is available. Anyone that has looked at every announcement that you've done as a county, particularly with the ARPA, you had a dollar figure associated with it. We're going to make available X amount of dollars for infrastructure. We're going to make it available X amount of dollars for parks. So the thought here was that you're basically saying we're going to make available up to that particular amount, and then we're going to judge the applications that come in to see whether or not we actually appropriate the funds. That was the thought here with respect to that. The second reason to think about this, and one of the reasons that we're looking at a longer term commitment, is if you look at the success of the legislative projects, I think one of the ones that comes to mind would be the art projects that you do. The success of that is essentially the availability and predictability of the funding over time. And what we've heard from both Westchester County and what we heard from Tompkins County and others is that these kinds of funding applications and work get brought into the capital stack and the decision making of developers as they move projects forward, and they look to make those available. The example I would give you at the state level is when the consolidated funding application first came out, it wasn't as well received as essentially what ends up happening now, where they get application after application after application. So the first thought here is, one is to give the applicants a certainty that there is a fiscal dollar amount that the county is willing to spend depending upon the application. The second is a thought to make sure that those folks that missed this funding round know that there's another funding round coming and can be basically begin to think about how to do that work. This is common in anyone that essentially is doing feasibility studies, that are looking at sites, that are doing that. We do this all the time in the transportation world. We do feasibility studies, then we go look for funding for those feasibility studies, knowing what funding is out there and knowing the cycle of funding that's out there.
So were you going to respond to what?
I was going to try to respond to everything all at once, yeah.
Okay, because I had a comment. Do you want to wait till after?
I'll wait.
Okay. So I appreciate the comments, Lisa. You tell me that the last Ways and Means meeting about he's getting all kinds of input from all different angles, and he's trying to make the best of it. And I think I actually like the idea that this is not sealed up and open-ended, because it gives us the opportunity, while we are committing to doing this, it also forces us to evaluate as we go along and say, is this actually working? Are we accomplishing our goals? I think this even, and I'm a big proponent of that, because position in the controls office is exactly to do that, is to measure and see, are we being effective in what we're trying to do? And if we're not, let's not continue to do it. So to have a locked in fund that may or may not work in a few years from now, let's try it first. And I appreciate that you're made a bunch of amendments here, because you are really trying to work in everybody's opinion, and they don't all match up. So go ahead, Lisa.
I'll let other folks. Yeah, you mentioned evaluate and accomplishing our goals. We don't do a heck of a lot of it. I do think there's some reports that come out of the comptroller's office that kind of show us, hey, this wasn't done well, and then we go, okay, well, let's move on, and then we make the same mistake after the same mistake. Can anybody tell me what's the latest monetary evaluation on the 911 center or Elizabeth Street, or how much that's going to cost us over the next couple of years, and all these other outstanding capital projects? This is going to come from the general fund, even though we have no idea even how much within millions of what we're going to have going into next year. And on top of it, after we get done subsidizing, it's kind of hard to evaluate when you talk about evaluating. You give somebody something that's building something, like Penrose, who's going to be building that anyways. We give them another $500,000 out of this fund, let's say, and they build it. Is that success? Or was it happening anyways? On top of it, I've talked about it to nauseam. A lot of these things turn into lotteries. People from out of town. School district gets no money. You know, this goes, the issues go on and on and on. And at the end of it, we don't even end up accomplishing, we don't even put a dent. In fact, you could make the argument that the housing crisis may even be worse in Ulster County. And now we're broke. But I just don't, I know there's a lot of people out in the world that agree with the concerns I have, because I talk to them every day, but I get up here in the sixth floor bubble, and we just want to be able to say we're doing something about housing. And all we know how to do in government is give out money. And we give out money to a handful of people that put their hand out. And that's what we end up doing. I've said, if this was very specific to, smaller things, adding on a cottage or an apartment in their basement or something like that, something that would make a little more sense to me, but it's not that. We don't have any protections for the school district in here, or any mandates that it doesn't turn into a lottery, so we're going to take a couple of bucks and give it
for the most part, to really rich developers that end up hurting our housing crisis. And at the end of it all, I know nobody wants to talk about migration, but somehow our population is decreasing or flattening out, and we're building every, drive around Ulster County, drive around Saugerties. There has been a lot been built over the last 20 years. Many units, as we call them. We don't call them homes anymore. They're units in government. And there's just still nowhere to live. So we are, all of us, making these issues worse, but it doesn't matter. We'll be like Tompkins County. We'll take credit for 50 units over in Highland at Rich Gerentine's thing at 14,000 units, because we gave them 700,000. And we'll evaluate and say it was a success because it got built and we gave money.
They're saying no one?
Yeah, my comments basically echo those of Chair Guevara's. I think this is a good start. It has flexibility built in. It's very easy to identify problems. It's also easy to foretell the future and then judge what you foretell of the future one way or the other. This, to me, is a step-by-step process, and this is concrete action to take steps that move us in a direction that is a consensus goal of this legislature and that the public is crying out to us to do. So I'm really grateful that we have a concrete approach that we can test as it goes as we go along.
Thanks. I mean, this is a question for finance. In the second to last resolved, where we talk about how the Commissioner of Finance may invest the monies in such fund as provided by law, and any interest earned or capital gains realized shall accrue to become part of the fund. So that's doable, even though it's an assignment and not actually a bona fide fund. Like,
yeah,
we just separate it out, and
yep,
similar to what we've done with other non-fund funds.
Correct.
Okay.
That's standard language, and it's standard practice what we've been doing.
So we just segregate it, mm-hmm, as an assignment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I just really quickly, can you give me an example of where else we do that in the budget right now, where we have money segregated and have it invested independently from other investments?
Tax stabilization funds.
Tax stabilization fund.
But that's a fund.
But that's a
that's
fund.
That's a real fund.
That's a reserve.
So give an example of one that's not a fund.
Right.
I mean, we can do it with any of the assignments. The tax stabilization fund, yes, it's a legal reserve that's,
yeah,
created, mm-hmm, but the accounting of it is similar to any of the other assignments.
But can you give an example of an assignment that we do it with?
Off the top of my head, I can look and see, but I would think the 911 reserve is another one that we would do this with.
Isn't the 911 reserve?
It's a capital project, right?
No,
not the capital project. But
those are
dedicated monies, right? Don't they have to?
They're assigned, yeah, but those are assigned funds. Your other fund that you would have that potentially tourism, but that's a different.
Not,
yeah,
that's not the same because that's the resolution. That's
a local law.
That's a local law, yeah.
We're being innovative.
Let's do your stuff.
Sure. They've been on everything. Thank you, Chair Rivers. I think actually a lot of the comments that followed when I raised my hand actually speak well to the point of how complicated this, or how thorough this process has been, and how complicated an issue this is. I think even those among us that don't think we should be investing in housing, I think even that is an important part of the conversation. I'm in my second term now, I'm in on 4 years as a legislator, and I've been, proposing housing legislation for a while now. And one thing that I've learned is you never want to do too much with one piece of legislation. And so is there still work to do ahead of us to dedicate permanent ongoing funding sources? There is. And for those that feel strongly about that, I look forward to your support when those come forward. A good litmus test that I've found, and this came up when we were working with the initial submission from the county executive's office for the allocation for the fiscal year, that section, when we toned that down, one of the reasons we did that is because it would have required a separate resolution or a budget allocation anyway, even if that language was included there. And I bring that up not to rehash history, but to say it's a good litmus test when you're going to require another piece of legislation anyway, not to try and do too much with one piece of legislation. And so that's, you know, while there might be more that we could do here, I think getting this program off the ground is really important. And I think the level of conversation that we've had about this over the last few months is good, not because, not only because we want to provide scrutiny, but also because we want the legislature to be oriented to what's happening here. Because the truth of the matter is, when we hopefully pass this later tonight, this is not the finish line for this program. This is the starting line for this program. We need to be paying attention. We need to make sure that this is administered appropriately. We need to make sure it's going to projects that are going to, while I might not agree with everything everyone has said here, we do want to make sure that we address all of those concerns as we're moving forward here. So I'm excited about the comments, and I really appreciate the scrutiny and conversation that I've had with everyone here.
Well, Abe, I want to thank you for taking in consideration the makeup of the board and, giving the Republican Party a more say in what's going on in the future with this. And I get some housing, affordable housing program is going to happen. Just to what detail? It just seems that this has been rushed to me. We can't come up with a better idea than to hand over money to millionaire developers. That would find a way to finance their projects anyway, for the most part. It just seems to be a better way. And a couple other points that people want to, like, maybe put more money in. There should be a plug on it somehow. What happens if this doesn't work? You know, what happens if the housing crisis gets worse? Are we going to dump more money or are we going to dump less money? My perspective here, being in government, is we're going to dump more money into it. I just hope that this works out, and I'd like to see this scaled back a little bit, at least the first couple of years, and to see what happens.
I'm going to respond to that. We've had this resolution in front of us for 3 months, and that fact doesn't speak to the amount of work that has gone into it. This is something that I began working with the county executive's team on in the prior administration. I proposed a fund that's actually still on the docket, technically, which I hope to withdraw later this week when this passes, for a $20 million housing fund. I believe this is the one-year anniversary of me proposing that that housing justice fund, which was a different format, and frankly, a good example of me trying to do too much with a single piece of legislation. Lessons I have learned here, where I wasn't addressing the ongoing funding sources, whereas I had in that. I don't want this to appear rushed, because the truth of the matter is, behind the scenes, the amount of work that has gone into the number of phone calls that the planning department has had with Tompkins nice. County, with Westchester County, with Dutchess County, is significant. And I actually believe that the engagement I've had with the planning department moving this along, even that just scratches the surface of the amount of work that they have put in here. However, I think that your points are really well made, and I think that's why it's important to recognize that every single time we do this every year, you know, I'm going to be here next year, you're going to be here next year. We're going to be deciding whether or not we want to fund individual projects. And I think as the housing crisis evolves, and I hope it does evolve for the better, as it evolves, you know, we'll adjust our approach appropriately, and we'll have the opportunity to do that. And it is intentional that this is set up that way to give us that opportunity.
Can I follow up? I know you guys have been putting in a lot of hard work. And I told you that in private one day. I said, you're getting more work done than anybody I've seen up here in a long time. But when I first got in this committee, we had talk about it on a prior resolution. And I said, what does this housing look like? You know, at no time did you say, or anybody in the planning department say, it's going to give developers money. You know, that is something fairly new, or at least we were being misled. I asked, are we going to have a Ulster County Housing Authority? And other things, is it going to be individual housing? You know, what does it look like? And nobody could tell me. And now we're, you know, this might have been out for 3 months, but, you know, several months ago, it wasn't on the table.
Yeah, I think I hear you. And what I recall a conversation where I actually came to the Republican caucus that we have to talk about when we were passing the housing as a county issue law. And you asked that question. I remember when you asked that question, and I believe I said I don't anticipate there being a housing authority. and that we'd be looking to the private sector to build housing, and that is developers. That's what that looks like, and I might not have used the right language then, but I wish that there was a different path forward, but working with the private sector, and that means housing developers. And it's not, and I will also note that this, while this might be the first fund of this sort here, this is not the first time the county has gotten involved in housing, and I don't think, given some of the other projects, I don't think that it's universally loved the way that we've approached housing in the past. This is a new approach. This is a transparent approach where we're not going to wait for the county executive to say, hey, I got this great deal on this real estate. Do you want to do it? And here's the resolution. We're going to say, this is what we want. Let's see what the public can come up with. Let's see what the private sector can come up with. And it was never my intention to mislead or obscure that the private sector was going to be playing a leading role in this. I'm sorry to be impressive with you.
Thank you. Let me just get my train of thought here back together. I wanted to go to the Tompkins County Development Fund Awards, and I noted in there when I looked at it the very first time that a lot of the awards were actually to towns who were building infrastructure so housing could be built there, right, within the town itself. So, and it even says right here, housing-related infrastructure, which could be required or requested from, say, the town of, the town of Plattekill or Gardner, right? Say we don't have water sewer. Could you help us get that? Could you give us some money towards this project that we have that will really help this developer, right? Now, that's a town request, not necessarily a developer request. So, and the town could say, we have this piece of property, we want to put infrastructure in, then a developer might be looking for it or something like that, right? And so I just wanted to point that out, that I think, you know, if you go and you look at what Tompkins County's actually done, you know, there's quite a bit of stuff in there that were issued directly to municipalities. And thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. I want to agree with what the chair of the committee had said earlier, and Legislator Nolan echoed in terms of the amount of conversation and compromise that has happened here. Some things I would have liked to see, for example, I wouldn't mind at all if there was an Ulster County Housing Authority. I wouldn't, but I'm happy that this includes a community land trust or other so-called non-conventional approaches that can be supported by this. What I see this as is more defining, I think the sponsor more or less said this, but the structure through which we can invest in these projects, and that gives the public, in a sense, through this HPOC committee, the first shot at evaluating it. I would have been happy for that committee to have a membership that was majority folks who have experienced housing insecurity, but I feel comfortable knowing that that is supposed to be at least one member of the committee. I share concerns about developers getting handouts, and I understand that we work with developers on various things that this body has passed in my time here, including Golden Hill, like it or not, and the project in Town of Lloyd, like it or not, and the home energy retrofits. I happen to think that was a very creative way to do job training and home improvement, and it's working with the private sector and individual workers and individual homeowners. And then finally, the legislature ourselves will, and I probably won't be in this body to make any of these decisions in the future, but the legislature ultimately has the say. So that's why I want to highlight again, it's really giving us the structure, but it will always come back to this body to decide ultimately on what the awards will be. Thank you.
Any other? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, congratulations, Dave.
Resolution 369. Motion?
I'll move for discussion.
Second. Discussion.
Can I just make a request that we either set up an hour-long separate meeting of sometime next month, if you give me the commitment, John, you'll schedule it for any legislator that wants to come down, and maybe we'll just do a group thing and go over New World with our legislative staff for anyone that wants to come, and we just postpone this or do something like that so we don't continue
going. I mean, I don't think there's a need to go back and forth for an hour. People are where they're at. Plenty of people support it, plenty don't. But a large question is, I think he's the only one to come down. And if we all start coming down for 30 minutes, an hour, I think it's unfair for Amber. We can do it all at once, knock it out, get a feel for it, and then have a vote on it. But I just assume postpone if you agree to that.
Well, it was actually that suggested otherwise, that smaller groups were better.
They prefer smaller. They ask for smaller groups.
Yeah.
They don't want a big group.
There's too many different directions that people would go if they're interested in doing it. But let me just make one comment, though. So Laura had sent out, an email earlier. Those are not incorporated in what we're discussing right now yet. Just to be clear.
What's that?
The amendment. Recommendations by Controller Gallagher.
Yeah.
Which basically.
I just saw that email.
Did that go to the committee?
No, so that's what I'm saying. So that's not necessarily yet what we're discussing. So just from being clear on that. So I have Legislator Criswell and Mr. Perkins.
Yeah, I just had one thought. We keep talking about training, that legislators will have to do training, but that to me is unclear what that means. So I'd like to actually see a little bit more meat around what that training would entail, just so that it's not vague. Because training could be, I'm in here for 5 minutes and I see somebody pop around the system a little bit. That to me is not a real training. So I'd actually like to see something that is more thorough and that we agree on, yeah, this seems like a substantial training that then people would actually understand how to use this system.
Yeah, so, I think if, the sponsors agree to a one-month postponement, that would be good. And maybe in the meantime, financial staff can set up several training times that work for them, put them out to everyone, have, two or three slots in each time maximum. Whatever's best for Amber and Natalie. I would like to know the sponsors and the executives' feedback on the comptroller's suggestion. I know it just went out last night and then today, and we don't have to discuss it right now, but I'm saying between now and then, I'd like to know what the three of you think about that suggestion, and I'd also like to hear some executive staff before the next meeting. Not that we come to the next meeting and we start the conversation, just if we can, in between now and then, could determine if that's something that you want to go with or you don't and why, and then let's hear from executive staff about that as well.
Chair, would it be helpful for me to explain what I suggested?
No, because we got it. The thing is, it's better for us to
consider.
Yeah,
it's just specifying certain pieces of the world.
I mean, how long can you
very quickly?
Yeah, okay. It would be helpful for me to hear. I spoke to you briefly, but it would
just limit legislator access to be able to perform a budget performance report, so you could see how much was spent or received in revenue or expenditures for each category. And it would allow you to access a vendor record to see the contracts that a vendor has, requiring New World training and cybersecurity training.
Which, my understanding, talking to the comptroller yesterday, would be more limited access than our financial analysts have.
Yeah.
So, just to be clear.
Yes, I hope that makes everybody happy. The exact comptroller are telling us how to. It's like having parents. It's nice, but if anybody, if you're able to use QuickBooks, you're gonna be able. That's. It's almost like we're arguing whether we can handle QuickBooks. It's just crazy. But at first glance, most of the stuff that I wanted to access is there. I don't know how much more Amber and Natalie have, how much more the extended there is, but if it limits something, the nuclear codes are out, right, March? Those are out? All right, well, then I think that we can start to get on board with this. But can we please, anybody that's has issues or is on the fence, please get with Amber or Natalie over the next couple of weeks and take a look.
Thanks. I'm just gonna say I had a longer thing to say, but there's really, I think, kind of as Joe said earlier, there's no point. After the nuclear codes comment and the parents and everything, I'm just gonna be a no on the postponement. I just think we should defeat it tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, Chris.
I just want to say, professionally, I've used QuickBooks for 20 years, and it is not QuickBooks. It just isn't. It's not as simple as QuickBooks in any way, shape, or form. It's just not. So that's a fact. Boom.
I agree. It's definitely
a different
thing. I just, you know, I think I'm a little insulted now that that there's individuals who think that we are not capable of learning how to do this.
That's not at all what I said. What I said is not QuickBooks. And because it's being likened to QuickBooks and the simplicity of QuickBooks.
Well, I've worked in multiple bookkeeping scenarios that were, you know, provided as a mainframe, and you know, and I'm still interested in being able to take a look at it on my own and learning how to use it. And again, it's just for financial and budgeting purposes. So,
that's exactly what Legislator Maloney said. Please schedule with the financial analyst for the next month. And any questions, any additional comments, please make sure to submit them.
I'm sure. Going to be postponed for a month.
I'll second that.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Thank you. So 370 has presented. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it for a
second.
Second. I'll second.
Second. Discussion.
370?
Yes.
So, Laura, I spoke to Laura, and you were gonna. We it's down to basically what Ken suggested. I didn't look at it. That's what I discussed with Laura, and that's what I was told.
No, it still has the resolve that all RFPs are going to have representatives from the legislature, two appointments, one by the chair, one by the majority.
The impression that's how.
No,
it's there. It says. Oh, there's a new one.
Yeah.
Oh, the one that's in my packet is open. Okay.
Yeah,
that's okay. Sorry, I stand corrected. Mine had it. That's good. Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
We're going to amend it here. I mean, we can't, but.
Yeah.
You want to just do it on the floor?
Yeah.
All right.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 382 as presented.
On 70?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the yes.
Motion? I'll make the
second.
Discussion?
382.
382.
Solar.
Yep.
This is.
Solar.
This is the solar?
Yes.
Is it Penrose or Family Woodstock that we're giving this to? Do we know?
So there is a Golden Hill Developers, an LLC, that gets established with respect to this, and the net profits will be split. When the net profits, they will be split between the Family Woodstock and Penrose. That's a 51%, so there's a majority ownership for the profit. So the short answer is this will go to the Golden Hill Developer LLC, which is essentially an organization formed for that purpose.
I requested who that LLC is, who has a vested interest in it, and was told that I would have it by the end of the night from Penrose, and followed up in an email, was told they'd have it to us in days, and that email has still not arrived. So we still don't even know who we're giving this money to, who it is. It's just a name. I don't know why they kept telling me they were going to give me that information, but never did. I've got the email chain. I think some of you are on it, and we've just never been given the information. Who is just an LLC? I'd love to know who it is. And now we're finding out that family's going to be 51%. They'll be eligible for grants, not pay a lot of taxes forever, and Penrose will still be splitting up those profits. A lottery, no school money.
So, one is we're not giving money to anyone. The point being is that we're actually paying them to essentially develop a housing, a solar facility on the project, and they're meeting the 50% required match. So there's a 50% required match. My understanding of the LLC, and well, certainly I wasn't aware that you had that request out to Penrose. My understanding is that there's two members of the LLC, and that would be Penrose and the Family of Woodstock.
You,
Did you just say that we're not giving money out, but we're giving money, giving out a grant for half the project, but we're not giving money out?
So, let me explain. So,
I don't think it needs an explanation, but go ahead.
So you're actually creating solar facilities associated with expenditures that are being made by the applicant. So to the extent that you're actually, they're developing the project for you and meeting the required match. So you're not handing them something and saying, we're basically what you're doing is you're going to end up owning that facility. So what if you think about this in terms of the county's energy policies, that's what we're trying to do here.
Who's going to own it?
The county.
Chris, did you have your hand up?
Nope.
No. Okay. So let's then go.
No.
We're buying the solar energy at this site.
Maybe they could do that. Okay. Want to do it my house?
So through the chair to the planner, Planner Doyle, real quick. So I keep hearing reference to the pilot over there and not paying any school tax and all this other stuff. I just wonder if you could give me just a high level of what the pilot entails and has it been approved. And is it going forward?
So the pilot has been approved by the Common Council.
Mm-hmm.
The Common Council then sent it to the mayor for the final negotiations. It has several pieces that have to be negotiated out. One is a preference policy with respect to whether or not people from the city of Kingston would receive preference from going in that work. They're working through that right now to see whether or not it's going to withstand the problems associated with or the concerns relative to the fair housing work. The pilot is sort of we don't have a signed pilot, but they have essentially all the documents associated with it and are in continued discussions. And I think where we are right now is those discussions leading to the ability to essentially implement the preference policy.
Okay, so
my understanding is the numbers have been agreed to.
And what are the numbers? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Those numbers, I don't have them. There's an impact fee associated with the city of Kingston, and then it's a per unit payment.
You don't have an idea of the percentage that school tax will be given as a discount or whatever, however you want to phrase it in a pilot. Is it 80%? Is it 90%? Is it 40%? Is it 10%?
So pilots typically have the jurisdiction for pilots typically are split between the taxing authorities based on the percentage of taxes that are levied. So looking at the city of Kingston, it's probably in the neighborhood of 65% of the pilot payments will go to the city of Kingston. And then if you look at that, the rest will go back to the city and back to the county as well.
What about schools? That's
that's what I meant. 65% to the schools. If I said the city of Kingston.
So you're saying so then there'll be a 35% discount in the pilot for school tax?
No, you can't understand what pilots do. And I'm more than willing to have this discussion on a more detailed basis. But what they end up doing is they're the ability for pilots under affordable housing is covered under state statute. And under state statute, you can form something called a housing trust fund, and it allows the individual municipality, in this case the city of Kingston, to negotiate a pilot for the basis of all the taxing jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's what's happened here, right? The work on that essentially provides for a number that is agreed to by the taxing jurisdiction. And that number has, based on a per unit cost, at least this pilot is based on a per unit payment to the city, which escalates over time. And that escalation factor in this pilot as proposed is 3% per year. Then what ends up happening is that the taxing jurisdiction then takes that money and splits it based on the number, the percentage of taxes that each individual taxing jurisdiction generally would collect.
Right, gotcha.
So if you look at that, I believe, and I haven't done these calculations in a while, but I believe within the city of Kingston, about 65% of those taxes go to the school district, and then the remainder are split between piece it gets a little bit more, but generally it's usually half and half between the county and the taxing jurisdiction. This pilot also provides for an impact fee to the city of Kingston that's given only to the city of Kingston.
That's your mind.
Yeah, as far as the preference policy goes, if the state allowed it, I believe we'd be the first municipality outside of New York City that's ever been successful with a policy like that, so it's probably not happening. This will be a lottery. I believe the school superintendent was quoted the other day saying that the school district did have concerns about this pilot. I think what you're always looking for, and what I think Brian was looking for, was basically how much would they be getting if this was just regular assessed at regular market value. It does get a little more complicated because there are things that they are going to get even if we don't give them what we're giving. So it's hard to totally figure it out, just this against what they're going to be paying. But safely understand that at depending on the child, $20,000 to $50,000 a year to educate a child, that's what the city needs to just do what they're doing. And 50 to 75 kids coming in, they are not nearly going to get that amount of money in taxes because of this pilot. So it will affect either they're gonna pass it along to the homeowners and put the burden on them, or you're going to have a subpar education experience there. And this was contested when they did. The Common Council did agree to it. I believe it was Hayes Clement there saying, look, Family Woodstock's involved. They're a not-for-profit. He's on the record saying, one way or another, this Penrose is getting a pilot, and they were eventually bullied into giving it. So that's where we're at. It's an inconvenient truth, but it is what it is.
Chair Rock,
thanks. Through you, Mr. Chairman, to Legislator Maloney. Does the City of Kingston School District have an overcrowding problem? Are they on the verge of needing more teachers, more classrooms, more space, more?
As far as teach, those are different questions. I do hear that there's been issues with filling teaching vacancies all over the place. I don't know if the City of Kingston has an issue with that.
I was talking about more class size than anything, because you know your allegation that it costs this much money to educate each pupil and it's going to add this many students. You know, I know in my home school district in Wauquill, enrollment is down lower currently than it was when I was going to school. So a lot of those costs that increase in schools are about the need for new buildings because of overcrowding, the need for more teachers because of overcrowding in classrooms. That's where a lot of the increased costs comes from that people talk about when development is causing, you know, like those kind of contracting problems and overcrowding problems in school districts. So if those don't exist, then some of the costs that you're talking about aren't necessarily accurate.
No, I stand by what I'm saying. And they have serious infrastructure issues. In fact, the City of Kingston's dealing with financial burdens that other school districts around here aren't even dealing with yet. They have, I believe, a complete elementary school just Spanish speaking. They don't even have teachers that speak Spanish, and they're trying to educate Spanish speaking children. Make no mistake, it's not like they got three empty school desks. That's not what I'm hearing from teachers and from the administration. I talked to a school board member at Lowe's just the other day, very against the pilot. I do not believe they got a couple of open desks, and this is going to be a matter of just taking these kids. A lot of it has to do with services and things that these kids are going to need. I mean, they're redoing. I don't know how much of the school district is going to be on the hook, or if it's just the City of Kingston thing for Deet Stadium, but they have a lot of infrastructure issues, especially with their what they provide in sports through the years. I mean, we have our new head of human rights here might not be here in this position if he didn't have the athletics programs that he had over in the City of Kingston, and that's definitely going to be affected, and they are greatly affected. Their sports have gone way downhill. I have a lot of parents that are really frustrated with the amount of funding that they're getting. So they've been robbing Peter to pay Paul for a long time, so if you think there's just some open desks and that those kids will just fill those in to no cost, I disagree.
I'm not saying that, and I didn't say that. I mean, what I said was that I think that the numbers that you said were somewhat of an exaggeration based on if there was an overcrowding problem, which I don't believe that there is. There may be other problems that are currently, you know, there, and staffing is a problem everywhere you go, from all the way up to all the way down. There's staffing problems in every sector. You know, so I mean, if there are staffing problems now because of things like demographic changes and things like that that are already existing, I don't see the pilot as the cause of those things, and that's what I felt like I heard from you.
No, we're talking about the special ed programs and services. The gambit is what adds up to $20,000 to $50,000 per student. And a lot of those things are not just hiring another teacher. You could add quite a bit of expense to a school district and would with every student without necessarily hiring another teacher.
Planner Doyle, then Legislator Arner.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple things. For me, it's a disappointment, I think, to look at the level of confusion with respect to pilots in general, and certainly the level of confusion or understanding with respect to pilots as it relates to affordable housing. A couple of things on the pilot question, I think it's important to note that there is a provision within the statute with respect to assessors that basically says that if there's not a pilot and more than 20% of your units are affordable, the assessors have to assess on the basis of income, not on the basis of value. So you're not assessing the project on the basis of the value of the building, which is how typical assessments are done. Under that provision, you have to assess based on, because the rents are restricted, the state has said your assessments are now based on the income that you generate, and that income that you generate is then based on how much money you actually have at the end of the day in terms of profit. And so there's a risk from the taxing jurisdiction that you may actually get less money, not more money, from a pilot. The risk from a developer's perspective is you may end up in a situation where, because there's not a fixed amount of money available to the project to budget for taxes, your investors will not invest. So the reason for all those issues come together with respect to pilots to make them highly sought after when it comes to affordable housing, but not for the basis of in terms of income loss, because you have to go back to a different method of assessment. I also want to just talk a little bit about the preference policy, and I think it's important to understand and the impact on the school district. I think it's important to understand that there are within this project about 40 spaces for supportive housing, which are known as ESHI units. Those will be moving homeless people that are in Ulster County, or were in Ulster County for homeless, into a supportive housing situation in the project. So that's about 30% of the total project of cost. So we know those people will be residents of Ulster County as defined. The other thing with respect to school district, 80 of these units are for seniors. So 80 of them will not have essentially the same amount of impact as it relates to school districts, because they're seniors. Last but not least, most of the units in this project are either one or two bedrooms. So when you think of that, they don't generate a lot of school kids associated with that. And yet the split for the school taxes, when you look at a pilot, is a standard split. So there's a lot of discussion, and I think Abe Ushetel put it best, Legislator Ushetel put it best. It's a complex problem that deserves a conversation, it deserves a discussion. Planning department would more than be willing to bring in experts in this field to talk to you about pilots, not only as it relates to this, but also as it relates to the housing program, if we go forward with the housing program. What I wouldn't want to have happen is to have this conversation come up over and over and over again. I think it's important to sort of pull this out and get it straightened out. And these are negotiated, as I said, between the taxing jurisdiction, and they're not negotiated typical to pilots that you'd see come through your IDA, and I thank you for that time.
All right, Legislator Arner, you're next. Just keep in mind, this is about the solar, and we do have session tonight, so Legislator Arner.
That's okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Real quick, I have a question right at the end that's very specific to the project.
No, it's about solar. Is it about solar?
Well, Everything's about solar, John, because if we don't approve the solar, it's all part of, we could end up, that's a bigger gap for Penrose. It may not happen. A vote against the solar is a vote against this project, perhaps still even happening or not, or vote for it. So you can't really parse it out that easily. But just in response to what Mr. Doyle just said about pilots, he mentioned the IDA right at the end. The Industrial Development Agency allows pilots. Many of us entered into politics and adulthood hearing about pilots. It was all about job creation and certain jobs, high-paying jobs that then you could do. You were doing away with taxes, with school taxes, but the creation of those jobs and the income far outweighed the damage to the school district. We have to be cognizant as we're subsidizing all these different businesses, especially developers, and we're engaging and entering into contracts with foreign for more not-for-profits. Where are the tax dollars coming from? At some point, it's totally unsustainable. We've pretty much got to that point already. But one last quick question. The 30% coming out of homeless shelters, not everyone in these homeless shelters are county residents, per se, or were. Some of them have passed through, and they need our help. Is there any stipulation about citizenship? Could the 30% that in these, could they be non-citizens, and could they end up in these, in this apartment, or is there some kind of, is there something hindering that?
That's a question I don't have an answer to. I just don't have.
So in theory, there could be migrants living in homeless shelters under Ulster County care, and they could end up being part of that 30% going
into the Social Security number.
In theory.
I would say that's a hypothetical, and I would say that that's not something that we've seen in the past. If Michael Burke could address that question for you, I'd be more than willing to get you an answer. But the short answer is that's not what Ishai units are, the supportive housing units that we've seen before. I sit on and work with the continuum of care on a regular basis. I'm not aware of all those supportive units on the continuum of care that are immigrants in supportive units.
Chairman,
I don't know whether there could be, but I don't know what that they're on.
Chairman, I'm going to just talk about the pilot for 2 seconds and then move on to solar panels. That's what we're
since that's
about.
The resolution?
I think so. Since we're going to bring in experts to talk about the pilots, it is a very complex situation. Maybe we should bring the school district and the other entities in to hear their perspective and how they feel about getting shortchanged. As to the solar panels, Chairwoman Bartels, I've been a big proponent of green energy since I've been here, all about banning the gas stoves and solar panels, creating jobs. Is there any county policy, past or present, to say these panels have to be American-made? Because we're not only doing this project, we're funding another project tonight.
No.
Well, I think that's a shame.
All right. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 439.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
I'll second.
This is 439?
It is.
439. Oh. Trevor.
More of these. Someone else want to go? I do if everybody gets to it.
With nobody else's comments, I'll just say that I have serious concerns about the fact that this does not have an out clause in the lease. This is the first that since I've been here, that is not in one of our lease agreements. I'm concerned about the sublease, and if the other parties do not enter into this, we are on the hook. I see the benefit of this project, and I'm taking a huge leap of faith here that this will all work out. But I am seriously concerned that it won't. We're going to have some work to do if it doesn't. Does anyone want it?
Well put, but that's why I'm a no. And just not what it's already, if you look at these leases, these government leases that I've been telling everybody were coming, because I knew about it because of these promises that were legally made by our former executive. To get the deal signed, and then things didn't happen the way they did. I mean, anytime the government says you're not supposed to do something, and we find it, shouldn't we stop and go, well, why not? Why shouldn't we be entering 10-year leases? Shouldn't we ask ourselves? Or no, we just find a go-around, and we're like the only residents over there. The place, I mean, from the very beginning, I've been saying a lot of these buildings need to come down. This is never going to be what it was promised to be. And now here we are trying to fill the place up with government dollars and hoping that the private funds then come. Well, that's not what I was originally told. I wasn't told, hey, we're going to do this, and then a bunch of the first big leases are all going to be us, and we're going to move everything we can over there. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to echo the concerns raised by Chair Gavaris. I do have concerns about the lack of the out clause, and while it's not what's before us right now, the lease signed by USITA that contemplates both subleases without the guarantee is a concern to me, because I get that USITA is a separate entity, but it's the sole member is the county, and so the county's on the hook in that way. I appreciate the visionary nature of the big picture of this project, which is contemplated in this whole workforce development idea. And I have sat down with the leaders from the colleges, and I also am acting on a certain amount of faith that it's gonna work. I've read the letters of intent, and again, I've had those conversations, and I know that there is an intention to move into the space. IPARC as an organization does have a track record. It's not just a one-off. I mean, there are success stories. There is the IPARC across the river, but they have projects around in other places in the Northeast and in the country. But again, I think what's being proposed is a pretty big visionary idea for a long, fallow property. And Legislator Cahill's probably felt it most personally, but again, it does cause me concern that there is no out for these 5 years, and functionally, really for the 10, because it's USITA that's on the hook, and we are USITA. So,
yeah. So I just want to say that there are other projects going on there right now. As a matter of fact, there's an up and running business in there, Archtop. They're actively hiring. They're actively expanding as we sit here today. They're hiring professionals. They're going to be hiring linemen very soon, right? If you ride by there, you'll see they have 6 trucks one day. Next day, they have 8 trucks. And they're expanding and growing. And eventually, they're going to have like 400 or 500 people working for them. And they are up and running, right? There are other entities that are also going to go in there as soon as they can get the site plan approvals from the town of Ulster. Things are happening in parallel, right? Just because we're not hearing of it here doesn't mean that they're not happening. They are happening. There's a master site plan before the Town of Ulster Planning Board. There's also housing proposals before the Town of Ulster Planning Board. All these things are happening in parallel to what we're trying to do here. And I think if you take a large picture from a higher level and look at that, it sends a very, very positive message about that site, that the community's support in it, and that we really do want it to be successful, because in the end, the people that benefit most from IPARC being successful are the citizens of Ulster County, right? And just one other thing that I hear continually that I just want to just say something about it, because it's the way I really feel about it, and that's that, like, so if they're struggling to get tenants, right, what better way to make sure they're successful than doing our part and helping them? You know, if it means that we should sign a lease or help them by putting a presence on that site, then why shouldn't we do that? I think we should be running to do those types of things to help economic development in the county. Is it a risk? Yeah, right? Who is the most successful people in the world? The people that take the biggest risks, right? And so in my view, if this is a little risky, I'm okay with that, because we do things that we think are cut and dry, right? Cut in stone, and they turn out being crap, right? Here's something that we have a private developer investing his own money, and ride by there and tell me if you don't think he is, because he is, right? And we see businesses thriving there already, right? And it's just going to get better and better and better. And as if we do our part, working in conjunction with our SUNY partners right there, and provide training and vocational training that that they're going to need going forward. That's what we do. That's what grows the economy. That's what's good for everybody in the county, right? Is it perfect? No. Show me one thing in government that's perfect. Show me one thing. I've never seen it in 7.5 years.
You've got a good point there, Brian.
You know, so do we take this risk? Do we take a leap of faith? I'm ready, willing, and able to do that for this. Thank you.
Next thing, Mark.
There's not actually not a lot of money going. That's where we come in. There's not a lot of risk being taken by iPark. They're borrowing against leases in order to not put a lot of skin in the game, and those leases have to be 10 years, which is where the EDA comes in, because the 5-year lease, the bank won't give Cotter the money, the way I understand it. So he needs a 10-year lease, which we're not technically allowed to enter into. So we bring in a public beneficiary corporation like the EDA, which has not exactly, where are their financials? I don't see anything since 2021. The ones I do see omit huge transactions, such as CARES funding, the iPark payment for East Campus, any transactions for West Campus I know nothing about. What was the closing on the West Campus? What did it net? Where are those funds? Remember when they were putting in, I know you remember that. John, I'm sure you do, when they were putting in duplicate invoices. We got the head of economic development leaving after running the EDA and giving out all those funds that we're going to be voting on tonight. But let's do a go-around with the EDA and enter into a 10-year lease so Cotter can start borrowing against that money and hope and pray and take some risks with other people's money. Hope and pray that those other leases that apparently there's letters out there that I don't think I've seen where there's other companies, maybe pass those along if you haven't,
they're in the
where
private.
There's other companies that are saying, you know what, we might just come out there and enter into a 10-year lease so he can keep borrowing and doing some things. We had a chance. We had a lot of ARPA funds. We had a chance to tear down some buildings. You talk to people in government over in the town of Ulster as well, off the record. And they agree a lot of these buildings needed to be torn down. We needed to start from scratch. We're trying to polish a turd, and we're doing it with tax dollars. And none of what we were told is happening the way it was supposed to happen, and that's all right. And the EDA, which we've all agreed has been a total disaster, an untransparent disaster, maybe worse, and we're still dealing with them. And can they at least get their transactions up there or can we get their financials up on the website before we take more county dollars? Can a resident get on there and see what the hell they're up to in the last 3 years, or is that too much to ask?
Yeah, I just want to say that I appreciate what I see as a holistic view of this campus. What I see is housing, I see childcare, I see a workforce development center, I see employers, I see the potential for retail shops. To me, this whole area, which was dead, is going to come to life, and I feel that we should put our skin in the game and be a part of this as well.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, make a point here. So whatever National Resources borrows, National Resources liable to pay back, not the county, not USITA, not anyone else. So if they're using this as a incentive or whatever the banks want to call it, I don't know, I'm not a banker, right? But if they need leases to borrow, then let them borrow. Let them be successful. I don't know why we're putting up resistance to trying to get a guy who's willing to spend $200 million, you know, and he's getting that from private equity. He's not getting all of that from government, that's for sure. He may get some benefit from government, as well he should, right? If he's going to invest the kind of money he's going to invest there and create jobs and create a community, basically, on that site, we should be jumping up and down supporting that. I'm sorry. I don't see why everything has to be negative, always.
No, I would just like to note that the EDA meetings are public meetings. And the public is invited to attend, as well as other legislators. It's not done in a vacuum.
Chair Bartels.
Yeah, I said for the record the things that caused me concern, but I think it also should be noted, because of where the conversation is going, that our tenancy, well, one, that the building's going to be built out to our specs, not on county dollars, and that our tenancy takes effect once that happens, which I do. But that's something that I feel good about.
Okay.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, just along the lines of Legislator Litz, I just want to point out that the EDA is a perfectly legal structure, and the ability to have 10-year timeframes instead of 5-year timeframes is provided for in state legislation so that counties that want to do economic development have a tool that will allow them to do that. So is it a different structure than we usually have? Yes. Is it for certain purposes? Yes. Should we have a well-functioning, transparent EDA? Yes. And I think we are all agreed about that. I am not in the camp that was described as everybody believing that the EDA is an unmitigated disaster, or whatever the exact terms were. It's a work in progress, and this kind of project is one that can really transform a community. And I really appreciate Legislator Cahill's comments as a legislator representing that district of what it can mean for the community, but I think it's for the whole county.
We paid $150-something thousand for a space study we've all talked about forever. I think it was supposed to be done in February. I know the contract expired in February, that it was amended to extend through June. We still haven't seen the study, and look at us. Rush to move county departments when we're waiting a long-awaited space study we spent $150,000 on, and for some reason it's not here. It's not in our hands. Does the executive have the space study? Because if they don't, and it's the firm that hasn't produced, let's cancel it. Because we are moving so many departments around right now and making so many decisions that you think we want to use this space study on. Does the executive have it? Can I ask that question to anyone here? Does the executive branch of government have this space study and they're just holding it?
We're 7 questions.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my one question right now. We have a deputy over there, I believe. Can somebody answer, anybody answer about the space study? We're talking about moving departments. It's not, you don't think that's a pretty low-hanging fruit kind of softball of a question about the space study? You don't.
I never said that, and don't put words in my mouth.
Okay. Why can't I ask a question to many deputies here that should know whether the space study...
I'm certainly not stopping you. Legislator Rock made the point of multiple questions, so that Deputy Ziklavau.
The space study has been provided in marketing draft to Public Works recently. They're reviewing it, and then
to Public Works, is that what you said?
It was supposed to be presented.
Public Works Department, I think.
So we're slow rolling the space study so we can get all these pieces of the text.
All right,
you have the draft.
Hey, that door needs to stay open. I'm sorry. We continually close that door, and that becomes a closed meeting.
And
then
again, you know, for many years, we had a hands-off approach to Tech City, in which the county became the taxpayer on the parcels at Tech City. It was only through intervention and foreclosure that story was able to change. And now there's somebody else paying school district taxes for that piece of property. So it came through purposeful intervention by the county, and this is continued with IPARC, and that this is the next phase of that, and it's really important to move that vision forward and realize the potential of that property.
First of all, the hands-off approach to Tech City years ago involved not foreclosing on Ginsburg for years when we could have, which is what led me to go and find 701 Grand Avenue. So I'm not sure it was a total positive what was going on over there with our hands-off approach. or that being hands-on meant something good. No, we started doing what we should have been doing for years. Can we see that draft, and shouldn't we see that draft? I mean, how do we know the draft? Why wouldn't we see the draft that first comes out? Or are you going to ask the firm? See, we should be overseeing this space study, because we're being presented before the space study comes out with where we should be moving departments. Then we're going to get a space study that apparently the exec has gone back and forth with behind the scenes before we ever see it. Are we going to be able to see the original draft and then what came after the whatever these negotiations are between them? They put forth the space study. They've taken a year too long, or 7 or 8 months too long. Give us the space study.
All right, any discussion?
Chair Martels, if you disagree with the dates that I have, please tell me when we when what when the RFP was, when the extensions were.
Let's leave it. All right, any other discussion?
I'm a bad guy.
All those in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, 450.
I move that we block 450, 53, and 55.
Okay, I'm going to sign it very nice.
Second, the block. They're all bonds. Okay. That's okay. They all made okay. sense to be together.
Second.
In hopes
second.
That at some point
it will
be
a block. Favor blocking?
Aye.
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 Okay. On the block. Motion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Close. How many was that? What did that bring us?
Three.
465.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
This is the recording of public meeting.
Sunshine's the best disinfectant. Let's move forward.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. There are forthcoming resolutions. Can I have a motion to reconsider 432, policy requiring vendors to comply with acceptable county policy?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
Can I have a motion to postpone 1 month?
I'll move that.
Second?
Second.
I'll get the first motion on reconsideration.
Oh. Put it right in there. Okay. All those in favor of considering?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Motion to postpone 1 month?
I'll Check move it.
Wrong. Second?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. I'm sorry, Gallagher.
Yes. Thank you very much. I want to bring you up to date on some of our audit work. We are launching an audit of the self-insurance program and the county's contract with the Lair Group. We look forward to sharing information with you on that as we learn more about it. Our solar pilot is audit is out to finance and management for comment. We've already given several extensions. As you can imagine, the finance team is really working to finish the books for 22, et cetera, so they're taking a little extra time with that. We're finalizing our next step in real property testing. We've tested over 10,000 general tax warrant transactions over the last few years. We do have 150 transactions remaining that we're looking at, which is less than 1%, so that's pretty good. And we like to report some good news guys once in a while. The CARES 2 audit of USITA was released. We are looking at CARES 1, and we are looking at USITA financial disbursements generally. Unfortunately, this did necessitate issuing a subpoena, which we did earlier this week. We received a subpoena response. We're reviewing that information. We are going to require additional books and records. So that'll be ongoing, and we'll report to you as soon as we know more. I wanted to mention to you, particularly because on the revenue side, sales tax has been a conversation. We received a payment earlier this week, and I have a little bit of good news. Sales tax, while relatively flat, we're now up 1.64% over last year. That's after May, June, and July collections that were down, or I should say receipts that were down. So August was up, and I think that's a good thing. We've not been able to produce our 2022 Q4 report because the financials are not closed. We're working on our second quarter report following numbers today. Investment revenues are up. We've earned an additional $3.3 million as a result of the changes made after our investment audit. However, we could have earned an additional $395,000 on those same funds if they were invested with NICLASS. And with the $90 million we still have sitting in our checking account, earning virtually nothing, we could have earned $1 million more in 2023 alone if we had just moved $50 million of that to Deposit Plus or to a better investment vehicle. The governor did sign the bill that continues expanded investment options for counties through 2026, so you still have time to make good on these things. But I just want to note, we're really not still diversified. It is true we are taking part through Bank of Green County into the IntraFi program, which spreads risk over a variety of banks. But I really strongly recommend that we diversify, and I do believe the administration is aware of this. So that's what I have, and I'm happy to answer any questions. The investigation and work with OSC is continuing. Can't speak more about that.
Let's hear them on.
Two quick things. I agree with you 100% diversified with Bank of Green County. You know, I've contacted and had a couple of conversations with the SEC because the amount of money we moved into the Bank of Green County was literally made it possible to make it. It was basically done alone by Burt Goldnick all at one time. There's also some towns around the county that all around that same exact time period, and I think there were conversations, all went to Bank of Green County. The stock felt it. It was huge. I think it's something that needs to be looked into, and we need to diversify. I think we should immediately be talking about it, a special meeting or whatever, but we turn on the news, we hear about different banks that are collapsing. I think you got to diversify. My question is, when you said sales tax is up 1.6%, are you taking into consideration inflation? Because if you're not, I'd say we're down.
It's not taking into account inflation. It's literally just raw receipts this year compared to last year for the same time period.
Even though everything costs more, so I'd say we're actually down a couple of percentage points in reality.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that as of August 10th, ARPA has new rules for spending, expanded rules for spending. So I spent an hour today on a webinar that the National Organizations of Counties gave. It's a 260-page document, which I don't know if you've seen it yet, it's a big one. So I'm going to wrap my head around those. There's two new categories for spending. So I'm going to think a little bit more about that and work with the team and present it to the committee this month.
Make a motion, we adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you.